Welcome to a new edition of the Neon Jazz Interview Series with Brooklyn-based jazz saxophonist, woodwind doubler, and composer Luke Norris. We caught up with him from his base in Brooklyn to talk about his new 2026 album, Moment from the Past, and his life in the world of music. This talented musician has degrees from the Eastman School of Music and the Berklee College of Music. He keeps up an active performance career across jazz, Broadway, and commercial music, alongside a thriving private teaching studio. As a sideman, he's performed with acclaimed cats like Danilo Perez, David Binney, along with being in the Broadway show Moulin Rouge. The story is unfolding. It's a great one. Enjoy this interview.
It's great to catch up with you. Moment from the Past is the album. I want to look into your career and all of the good stuff. So thank you for taking a minute out today. I appreciate
it. Thank you.
So before we get into the album, I want to begin with, you know, a couple of things that have kind of shaped our world. You know, in recent memory, and 6 years ago, this pandemic changed so much, especially musicians. How did you get through that era, and how has it changed the way that you create and do things today?
That's a good question. Well, right when the pandemic happened, I was about to move to Brooklyn. And then everything kind of went down, and that plan was pushed later on. So I was kind of, I was stuck living at home in Long Island, and I was teaching a lot. So it was weird. I was like teaching students online, which is not the most practical thing for beginning. Like, you know, I didn't learn an instrument that way. I learned one-on-one in person. So like that already, that was like, we had to adapt somehow, and there were no gigs obviously. So there was no, you know, there's no like remote performances. So it was like, for me, it was all teaching. And I think I was writing more and practicing. But it was so unprecedented that it was like, how, you know, what's gonna emerge from this? And one thing that happened for me was like, I started to learn how to use like a DAW, like Logic. You know, I was using GarageBand since I was really young, but starting to learn Logic, and all of my friends they were already doing that, so they got deeper into doing that. And that actually shaped how I did my record. Because once the pandemic subsided and everyone kind of had these new skills of working on music at home, you know, writing demos, not just writing it at the piano or an acoustic instrument, but like putting it into software and having parts, hearing parts that way. So when it came time for me to do my record, we recorded it in person, but everything that came after it was done, like what we're referring to it as, like the post-production element, was all done like, you know, two people and a computer basically, you know, and some other effects, but it definitely changed the workflow. And again, we had to like adapt somehow. Musicians had to adapt to the new, you know, it's like, okay, well, you know, the old way of doing things is not quite, you know, it already didn't exist. And then through the pandemic, it was like kind of weakened further. So we had to really find new ways of like surviving and still making music in like a relevant way.
Well, and yeah, and it was interesting because there was a lot of, there was just so much that was going on, and no one knew when we were going to get out of it. I think viral thing, you know, there wasn't, not everybody could be Emmett Cohen, and you know,
right,
he exploded during that time. It was like, there was a lot of survival. But let me ask you this: with this album, Moment from the Past, what was kind of your overarching artistic vision going into this?
It was, I had compositions. I had a few compositions that I was workshopping with a band, and I had been playing for a little bit of time. But then like, as I, pieced together the album, there was this like nostalgic feeling of, for like for childhood, for you know, like I grew up in Bethpage, and I had all my family was basically like within like a 5 or 10 minute commute. So it was like this very tight-knit, small, idyllic upbringing. And it was also very like I guess potent is the word. Like I don't know if you have that too for your childhood, but when I see pictures of like, you know, for example, like my grandfather's house or my grandmother's house, you know, it's so vivid in a way that was like, you know, like they aesthetically that doesn't exist anymore. It only exists in like photographs or home video. So as the record was getting done, I was also going through all this like home video tapes, you know, figuring out like, oh, I can put this, you know, I can digitize this or these still work. And so that really gave me like another layer of like a sense of nostalgia, like connected to the music in some way. And then the front cover, the cover art is actually like I cut up a collage of old family photos. So all of those places are like, you know, like one is my grandfather's house, one is like the backyard or, you know, my old backyard. Like I kind of wanted it to be like like a collage of those potent early memories, you know, like an idyllic time in your life. And some of the audio that we ended up using in the track Moment from the Past is extracted from those home videos as well.
Yeah.
So I kind of wanted to make like a, yeah, I guess a sound collage would be the most accurate description.
It's interesting when you bring up those old images of childhood. I think about I went when I was a kid up to Long Island to see where my dad was raised and all of the backyard shots and the way the neighborhood looked. And I orchestrated all of these stories because my dad told me early stories about growing up there. And it's wild how those things can get burned in. And when you're in our generation, so to speak, it's like you're bridging this thing from rotary dial to this ultra high level of AI today. And it's
Yes,
like
exactly.
the way we catalog and go through memories is starting to turn into something where the younger generations are lost when you explain. There used to be these little cassette tapes that you would record audio on, or, you know, there was cassette tapes at all, or 8-track. Like those things are becoming bygone things.
Yeah, totally. Yeah. So, yeah, physical media. Things that were maybe like high tech at the time, or, you know, I grew up like collecting CDs. Like that was cool for me, you know, like an attachment to like physical media and photographs, going through old pictures and all that stuff is, I think is cool.
Yeah, it certainly is. So what are you hoping the listener gets from this album?
I'm hoping that they experience like a bit of that like emotional encoding of, you know, not every track is like, okay, this is that moment, you know, this is about this person or this is about that, but it's more like a general feeling of like familiarity or nostalgia or maybe it's a little more clear with the tracks that have like the audio. But even then, it's like the way that we processed everything, it's still like it's kind of like a sheen. It's like very mysterious. And I really hope that the listener, like, they can pick up on how it's like, it's at its core, it's an instrumental jazz record, but all of the extra post-production really takes it to another place. And that was part of my intention too, was like, you know, let's see if we can incorporate what people are doing in other types of modern music into instrumental jazz, basically.
So, how did this journey into the music, into the jazz, how did it begin? Was it always your destiny to be a musician?
I think if you asked me as a kid, I think I would have said I remember saying, "Oh, I want to be like an author or something," because I always liked writing. But I think like many people, I picked up an instrument around like third or fourth grade, and I stuck with it. And then I think come time during high school, it was like I was showing some proficiency at it, and thankfully my band teacher said, "Oh, you should take private lessons." And then that really like set me on a path to being more like focused, more like hyper focused about it. It's more serious. And then it was maybe a little more evident. I was like, oh, maybe I could piece this together into a career. Like, maybe it is possible somehow. But that wouldn't have been possible without like really great music teachers that were encouraging, and an environment like Long Island had a really strong just music teaching program, and there were all these extra things that you could do as a student that were kind of like stepping stones, kind of built me up to a point where, in addition to my own practice and my own like musical explorations, like the two together really set me on my path, I guess. Yeah, for sure.
So, do you remember the first live jazz or show otherwise that you saw in person that inspired you and made you think, I might want to hop up on stage and do that one day, whether it was conscious or subconscious?
I mean, live or just
Yeah, probably, yeah, in person, but it could be a
okay.
seminal thing that was just a part of you experiencing that in whatever way.
Well, I think I do remember my first live show. It was like a smooth jazz saxophone player that I that's just that was my window into music at that age, into saxophone, because it was on the radio. And I remember really being into this guy's music and seeing him live. My parents took me to see him, and I was like, wow, that's cool. But then later on, you know what? There was this like jazz ensemble that rehearsed in a bar around the block from my house, and they were all music teachers, and they were all but they played really high level music, and they were all playing at a high level. So like me hearing that locally, like regularly throughout, I think it was a weekly gig at that point, and like sneaking into the bar, like and then eventually like sitting in with them, that was like a huge experience of like, okay, this is the important music, like the music of Thad Jones and Count Basie, Bob Mincer. Like first time hearing that and experiencing that was like a kind of like a religious moment for sure.
Yeah. So when you decided that you wanted to be a musician, you have this idea of what it's going to be like to live this life. And
Yeah.
then you actually live the life of being a musician.
Yeah.
What's been the difference between this ideological, idyllic notion of what your life is going to be like, and then actually living your life every day, waking up, living this life as a musician?
I think it's different. It's really different for everyone. And even looking at your interviews, like the breadth of like the different artists that you interview, I'm sure everyone will have a different response to that. For me, it's a little more geared to like the working side of things. Like, okay, how can I use this skill that I went to school for? How can I use it to like support myself? Because that was an important thing. That's an important thing I had in my head, was like, okay, well, I'm gonna get this degree, and then it's gonna carry me through. That's the point. So it's, I do have to teach. I teach privately, and I play, but I play in like different contexts that, are maybe more like pop oriented or commercial music. But the study, I still like retain the personal study of like the things that I'm interested in. So for
Yeah.
me, that feels like a good balance.
So let's get back to that creamy middle of the dream. And I'm going to ask you this.
Yeah.
When you decided that you're going to move to Brooklyn and you get near New York and it's the Mecca of jazz, you know, there's these stages that we've heard musicians play on their whole
Sure.
life.
Yeah.
What was the first stage that you dreamed that you were going to play on, that you did play on? You were like, wow, it's here, it's happening.
You know what? Even just like I think I early on, like Small's Jazz Club, I think I sat in there once, and that was like, it's like, okay, even that it was a jam session, like I was like, okay, wow, I'm here. I'm not a student anymore. I've been like set out into the world. And yeah, there are just at that there are just other musicians, like, you know, people that I had been listening to just like circulating in the club, and I'm like, okay, well, I'm standing up here with my instrument in my hand, and I'm playing, you know. Like that was a good it was a good first step.
Yeah.
But then professionally after that, like I had it in my head that I would get into like the Broadway thing, and that seemed like a far reach. But then even just like eventually that did happen, and just subbing, and that's not really a stage, it's more in this case it's like you're in a room, but just to be in that moment, that was like, okay, this is, you know, the things that I've built up to myself are possible.
Yeah.
So
So the other thing that's going on right now, especially in America, is there's a lot of stress between war and rising prices and immigration and all these things. I
yeah.
think people need entertainment music in a way that
Sure.
historically in the pantheon of American history, musicians and artists have always stepped in to help us make things
Yeah.
relevant, bind us, give us an escape from what's going on. Do you think about that in delivering shows and creating music now in a different way?
Yeah, I think since the pandemic, it's like unavoidable. I think it's important to, as an artist, to, you know, it's not, your music's not just purely entertainment or distraction. To keep it relevant, you need to address like the social political issues of your current climate, you know, especially in a music like jazz, which is like, it's black music. That's important to honor, and to you can't really ignore that aspect of it, especially because that's for me a lot of where the inspiration came from. Some of the great artists, you know, Coltrane, he was he you know he dealt with civil rights issues in his music and spiritual issues. So yeah, I think it's kind of like the artist's duty to address that in some way, you know. It can't just purely be distraction.
Totally.
So
So, what do you look forward to every day as a professional musician? What gets you up? What motivates you? What do you love about this life of being a musician?
I think like the doing part of it, like the just the, you know, the playing the instrument or practicing even still is pretty motivating. We couldn't really perform during the pandemic, so having the chance to do it now is very like it's important and refreshing. So that is probably the part that like the being there in the moment and doing it is like the satisfaction. The commuting and the travel is maybe not is
Yeah.
the is maybe a lesser something I don't look forward to as much, is maybe like a necessary evil, but the whatever, it's like the, you know, the result is always worth it. So
So speaking of travel, let's go on a good journey here. Let's get into a time machine and you can go back in time and see one jazz show. Where are you going to go? Who are you going to see? I know it's unfair when it's
yeah, that is
fun.
quite a good question. I think I would have liked to be at the concert where they recorded the Miles Davis, those two records, "For and More" and "My Funny Valentine." I think it was maybe it was one concert that they split up, but just to be in the room to hear that band live, that would have been like a religious moment for sure.
That would have been
You know,
crazy.
to hear that quintet play.
Yeah. So let me ask you this. Everyone has a perception of you, family, friends, fans,
Sure.
everyone on the
Yeah.
bandstand and different circles, but you run the show. What's your perception of you? Who do you think you are?
A great question. I mean, I think at my at heart, I'm a saxophone player, but I think like just being creatively oriented, I'm, you know, I have like a certain way of conveying like I'm feeling or sentiment through like my writing and my playing, like certain sensitivity, a certain like empathetic nature. I hope that comes through. Not just in the playing aspect of it, but the presentation, the music itself, you know, especially on this record. I think that definitely there's a certain like sensitivity, like a balance of like fire and we'll say light or something like that, like the two of those. So,
Yeah. So Moment from the Past is the new album. If anybody wants to get a copy or
Yes.
download it or catch you live, any of the Good Business previous
Yeah.
album, where do they go?
Feel like you could go to my Instagram. I feel like that's where it's most centrally located. The album is up on Bandcamp.
Okay.
If you just search my name and Moment from the Past. It's also on streaming services too. And if anyone out there wants a physical copy, there are CDs. You know, we talked about collecting CDs. Like, I have a small collection that, you know,
Yeah.
yeah. So I think that's the best place for that.
Right on. I will put all
Yeah.
those links in the show notes. Yeah, I still drive around with CDs in the car. I got an old enough car, and that's when I can really savor the coffee, when I can get in the car and let that music wash over the world. It makes sense.
Oh, that's all the fun, you know? That's the fun aspect to it.
That's
Yeah.
the essence for sure. Luke, man, this has been wonderful. Thank you, sir. I appreciate it.
Thanks, Joe. I really appreciate it.
Thanks for listening and tuning in to another Neon Jazz interview, where we give you a bit of insight into the finest players and minds in Brooklyn, Kansas City, and spots all over the world, giving fans all that jazz. Thanks to Luke for his time, honesty, and story. If you want to hear more Neon Jazz interviews, you can find us on Spotify and Apple Podcasts. Subscribe to us at YouTube, and for everything Neon Jazz, go to the neonjazz.blogspot.com. Until next time, enjoy the jazz, my friends.
Neon Jazz.